Sister, woman, sister, can you still feel any pain? Or have they robbed you of your anger while putting Thorazina in your vein? Sister, woman, sister, have the walls grown up so high that you can't even dream of leaving and you've forgotten how to fly?
Hi, I'm Irene Yarrow, and this is Every Woman Speaks.
Did they take away your child and they locked her up in some juvenile hall to grow up weary and wild? Oh, sister, woman, sister.
This is a program for all women, lesbian, bisexual, heterosexual, celibate, and tonight we have a new category which I have just thought of, undecided. That doesn't quite fit into celibate or bisexual or heterosexual, any of the others. It's for all of us, well-known and not known, of different racial and ethnic groups, of all classes and all ages. This is a place for us to be together, to talk and listen and learn and to grow. And it's especially a place for communication between me and my guests, but tonight I have no guests, between me and you out there, and that's what it's all about tonight. Tonight I'm going to read you a story, and it's called Woman Becoming. Playing the recorder is something I do by myself. It is also one of the array of things I taught myself, including as well writing, typing, ping pong. I didn't go to graduate school. The tune I work best with is Blue Skies. I didn't go to college either. Will the feeling of inferiority over that ever leave me? I can do a 5-minute improvisation on Blue Skies that is highly musical. Green Sleeves, too, and even Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. I do them simplistically, but sometimes something happens between me and the recorder, especially in solitude. When there is solitude and quiet, but that's very rare, I can make music. Slowly moving down into the different levels of myself, I can think, feel, create, fill the room with me, my sound transcribed onto recorder. I play music in the night this way, when it's late and quiet. Then there's the way I've always rocked myself to sleep, too, and comforted myself. My hand on my crotch holding tight, palm pressing on my clitoris and finger inside my vagina, my body nurturing me. Good night speaks my finger to my vagina. Don't leave, the cervix, the walls reply, gripping tight. Oh, I wasn't going to, I'm staying right here, waggles my finger back. I came here to sleep with you, and I love you. I love you too, good night, murmurs my vagina to me sleepily, and we fall asleep smiling. My mouth curves in a smile, and it longs for a kiss, so it gives one and gets one back. From anywhere on my skin is just fine, perhaps my underarm, my upper arm is closest, but breasts are so lovely, and I can't reach them with my mouth, so I do with my hand, cupping them, my own creatures to be held. I am a woman writing a song to a woman. The woman is myself. The woman is another woman. I'm no songwriter, but I am writing. I'm not so sure I'm talking about myself loving myself or women loving women. Being a woman loving women, the lines blur. With great beauty, though, like undulating lines of sun on the waves in the middle of the ocean, halfway between one continent and the next, the lines of definition barely existing between being a woman loving yourself and being a woman loving women. Same breasts, same warm skin, same softness, and particularly female sense of life and joy, such laughter and nurturing possible. I love the dark wood of my recorder. Somehow my fingers can find just the right places to touch and create the mellow, soft sounds. I love music so, though I don't always know the names of too many pieces, just their sounds. They always told me I couldn't sing, and I love to. Now I know I can, and I do, but I love making these little soft round notes too, these lesbian sounds, these woman sounds, soft with my fingers and breath and recorder, and strong too, these notes are, fine and full and free. I love lesbian. I roll the word in my mouth like candy, like sweet liqueur. I roll it from side to side over my tongue and teeth, such a good taste. My tongue passes a tooth that needs filling. I make a note to call the woman dentist I finally found. Walking home the other night, my arm around Laura, hers around me, her head on my shoulder, I suddenly see, coming down the street and nearly upon us, practically the entire PTA of my children's school. The school is right across the street from my house. A meeting must have just ended. They know me well. For 13 years, I've been straight and married. Nancy Lesser leads them. As they reach me, I see her very quickly take in lesbians. Then she lets her eyes focus on our faces. Her first look wasn't slow enough to see any features. It was just to determine both women. Now she sees me and knows me, and I see the shock register, followed by the fast recovery, the strained smile. But I know her, too. Matron at 30. Same age, more or less, as I. And I am so young, my life just begun. As a woman on a radio program on coming out I took part in making said, I'm 50 years old now, and I feel my life is just beginning. At the bar tonight, dancing in the middle of the floor, are two women with neat gray hair. One is tall, one short. They're dressed in pastel-colored pantsuits, and both wear glasses. They're about 60. They hold each other and dance. They look exactly like the ladies at the bar mitzvahs, all those aunts horrified at someone's unmentionable daughter who loves women. I'm so glad to see them here. Sometimes I look at old couples on the street and see decades of bitterness in the lines on their faces. Then I'm a teenager again, listening to my mother crying from the 1,000th unjustified berating she's just received from my father. And I'm saying to her, why don't you leave him? You could get a divorce. Oh, but I love him, she sobs pitifully. How could you love him the way he treats you all the time? I feel furious remembering it, but at the time I think I felt mostly frustration. I know he treats me like that, but underneath he loves me. You don't know, you can't see it, but underneath he loves me very much, and he needs me. But what about you? He treats you like garbage. Oh, you don't understand. I could never leave him. And she never did. Early morning, the alarm just rung. Jennifer, 6, creeps into bed and snuggles against me. Mommy, she whispers, between me and Laura, who do you love best? Who do you think? I answer. Practically inaudibly, she says, I think Laura. I hug her. No, honey, I love Laura too, but I always love my children first. Oh, she pauses, then still very much whispering, what would happen if you said that in front of her? What would happen if Laura heard that I love you better than her? I answer in a normally loud voice. She nods. She'd say she knew that. Oh. Laura opens her eyes and smiles at Jennifer. Jenny burrows under the covers. Nicholas is 12. I came out to him a month after his father and I separated. I did it because knowing, finally, what I was, and having been invisible to myself for so long, I couldn't be invisible in any way any longer. I had to be out, especially in my own home, and I thought it would be okay with him. I asked him if he knew about homosexuality, and he said sure he did. Living on Christopher Street, it would be hard for him not to. It's mostly men he sees, though. So I said, could he tell me what it meant? And he said it meant men loving other men. Or women loving other women, too. Except that was called something else, wasn't it? Lesbian or something? I said, right. Then I said, I thought that's what I was. The first thing he answered a good number of seconds later was, oh, but you're not sure yet, right? So I told him actually I was. That had just been a way of saying it. We talked about women loving women, and then I gave him the lesbian section in Our Bodies, Ourselves to read again. He'd read the whole book when I first got it. I had forgotten that. He reread it, and then I asked him if there was anything he didn't understand. And he said he didn't understand why some people thought it was sick, because people should be able to do what they want. Other people shouldn't tell them what to do. He hates that. I said some people just listened to what other people told them without thinking about it themselves, and I tried to explain how the culture put that label of sickness on us. But I also told him things were changing some now, too, and that made him happier. And I said I'd needed to tell him because I couldn't be in the closet any more. It felt terrible to be there. And he said that was right, but he thought he would stay in a while himself. That threw me. But it turned out he meant he didn't think he was going to tell all his friends his mother was a lesbian right away. Then I told him a worry of mine. He might think I didn't like him anymore because he was a male, and I wanted him to know that wasn't so. I said I didn't dislike men because they were men, but because they were sexists. But I wouldn't dislike men who weren't sexists, and that mainly I was a lesbian because I loved women, but that he, my son, would remain my son, and I would continue to love him. When I told Daniel, the children's father, that I came out to Nick as a lesbian, he said that was sick and perverse, and I should not have laid such a heavy thing on an innocent child. Nausea was almost one of the first things I began to find out about in therapy. Every time I'd really begin to talk, I'd experience nausea. Not just any talking, but talking that had a lot of meaning and depth. Then the images of my father and mother, brother and grandmother, and aunts and uncles all appeared like cut-out paper dolls, folded in the right places to sit on the hills of my brain. My father swinging his legs nonchalantly, his eyebrows raised, my brother standing growing taller and taller until I couldn't see his head any longer, my mother perched there right in the middle of my forehead, looking down at me and laughing. Then the nausea would come, and I'd ask how I could ever rid myself of their specters haunting me and never giving me anything. Blend thoroughly in blender. 8 ounces tomato juice, 20 Valium, 5 milligrams, 20 Cafrigo with PB, 25 Ornade Spanchules, 4 Nimbutal, 9 Percodan, 2 bottles of aspirin. Various cold tablets, Midol, 1 Darvon, 2 Librium, anything else available, splash Tabasco. Chill and serve. Until they drive me to that. But thinking about dying, thinking of ways, everyone goes through that. I've been through fantasies of self-mutilation and of sleeping forever. It's only a part of everything there is to tell. It takes a long time to tell about everything, and frequently it's confusing to think it all because the threads are too many and intertwined and tangled, the thoughts and relationships like white worms in your brain made of white worms tangled and twisted around each other so tightly one never moves without moving another, and also they get hungry and eat their brothers and sisters, but they're so twisted around and look so exactly identical that they can't tell when they try to fill their hunger, whether it's a sister they're biting or themselves, until they feel it and scream and stop. But then it's already too late. But they're so hungry. The poster reads, "I am a woman giving birth to myself." Births are seldom easy. Coming out is no single thing. Just as, for example, I don't think primal therapy is one great all-releasing scream, but a long series of screams, probably exactly equivalent to the number of screams, rages, hurts, and pains sustained and repressed throughout one's whole life. My coming out was and is a series of happenings threaded in different ways through time and space, a lot of time, a lot of space, a lot of happenings that are each exhilarating, each time make me feel I'm totally out, and there's always another to go. I came from a place where the word homosexual or any of the slang terms signifying it were never even pronounced, not in my home, among my friends, or in any school I ever attended. I don't think, in Queens, New York City, at the time I grew up, kids were using the words queer, fairy, fag, the way they do now, and dyke or butch were never even heard of. A friend of mine from Nebraska once told me she never knew there were any real live Jews until she grew up and left home. She thought they had only existed in biblical times. That's about how familiar I was with homosexuality. I was born in 1941. In the 50s and early 60s, from when I was a teenager through my mid-20s, there was no women's liberation, no gay liberation. Gays were all in the closets and women in the kitchens and behind typewriters and sales counters and teachers' desks and a few other places, but essentially in the kitchens. I remember one single mention of homosexuality ever. When I was about 15 or 16, my father made a slight aside, half a sentence long, about a third cousin of mine who was a fairy. Of course, I knew what he meant, and I should have been curious to hear more. But the whole concept was so repressed that I can't recall experiencing even any curiosity about it, not about the cousin or the idea. I never thought of it. So I had no real exposure to homosexuality through my whole life, but a pull to it, so deep inside me, I could only feel it, never grasp it with my mind enough to wonder what it was. A flushed anticipation when I'd be going to a girlfriend's house, that was it. And all the closeness I ever had with anyone, with two or three friends, whom I know now I must have really loved. Then it never crossed my mind that that was possible. It never occurred to me. Sex and love relationships were with boys. So there were only my close, pregnant friendships and an occasional book, The Well of Loneliness, The Songs of Bilitis. Reading them, the yearning that I had no way to recognize for what it was, but clinging to every word and loving the women in them. But only inside me. Don't mistake me. I didn't know then, only now. I began dating boys. Starting at 13, I necked. In movies, doorways, the back seats of cars, once on the grass at Forest Park with a boy I'd never even seen before, for hours, me fighting but letting him kiss me and kiss me and resisting the whole time until he gave up and there on the ground under the sky with the trees all around finally relaxed his tense body and just held me, not trying to reach, touch, or insert anything into me anymore, but just held. And the moment he did, I relaxed and let myself be held. At 17, a boy convinced me to let him make love to me, or else I might lose him. So I did. We did. What did I feel? Pain and disappointment and confusion. I thought it was supposed to feel great. Days, weeks later, still sleeping with him, no more pain, still no feeling. Or rather, some. When he'd finish and drop down beside me and hold me, then I got a little pleasure, the tiniest bit, at getting held. It wasn't sexual pleasure, but I figured it was all there was. At 19, I married, and at 21, I had a baby. At 22, I had a crush on a woman in the subway. I was coming home from work. She had shining red hair, combed straight back from her forehead, and her forehead was broad and white and perfectly smooth. Beneath it, her eyes were warm brown, and I gazed into them, and a wave of shock hit me. Not that I knew what it was. I was only 22, still 10 years away from knowing. I saw her on the train for 3 weeks, almost every night. Shortly, she saw me staring. I don't know what she felt, but I'm sure we played a little game. I gazed at her, and she at me, all the way home, 3 or 4 times a week for those weeks. I wanted her so, and had no idea that I did. I would get home and deal with my husband and son. I'd get home and deal with dinners and tempers and tense or tedious evenings, and at night, perhaps I'd dream. From then on, every year after that, I'd become friends with a new woman. The friendship would deepen. I'd feel such warmth for her. My cheeks would glow. I'd be so excited at seeing her, thinking how pretty she was, even saying so to others. Isn't Lynn pretty? Don't you love her hair and her eyes? Sometimes there was playfulness close to flirtation in the time spent together, but never out in the open, into actions, words, or even thoughts. But I could list the women for you. Lynn, Maggie, Sarah, Karen, Jessie. I think I loved all of them. Until I couldn't bear being with them any more, and found some reason to break off the friendships, and grew older and more entrenched in my marriage. In the idea that I loved the man I was married to, because that's the way things were. I couldn't even break from that pattern enough to think about what I said I was feeling. I'd remember my mother and father. People stay married. I had no right to stop loving him for no reason. I had to love him. Isn't that what women did? And as men went, he wasn't bad. And he was my man, my possession. So that made it all right that I was his, and must be what I wanted, no? He was okay-looking and sexually adequate. That's what you call someone battering away at you all the time, isn't it? He had no trouble. I'm sure he'd appreciate my testimony of that. He was always right there, wielding himself like a weapon against my body, for 13 years, cajoling, begging, seducing, and forcing entry. Forced entry is that grand or petty larceny, or neither. But against the law? But here's his affidavit, a sexually adequate man. Really, I shouldn't go on so. I was supposed to love him, and I was sure I did. I left it at that, dulled even my most extreme reactions, dulled my senses, and learned to accept. But I was so cold. I was always alone. I felt I was inside a tunnel, way at the other end of a tunnel. No one could reach me, even if they cared to. They could hardly see me. I was all squinched up. I grew smaller and smaller at the end of the tunnel. The other end was the wide end, and I was so far down the small end there was no way for them to reach me, touch me. They could just see me. I couldn't feel anything, though I thought I could. I think what I felt was what I understood with my mind feeling was supposed to be like. Then a friendship came that remained. Jean. We were friends for 5 years, warm and close, very mutually protective. Recently, she said she thinks it was a symbiotic relationship. We fed off each other. It was very loving and, of course, non-sexual. Then she became ill and spent a week in our house. That week, I actually felt my feelings for women out loud in my mind for the first time. I felt them for only a very little while before I safely buried them again, but for a day or two, beginning small but growing, the feelings were out. It began with just their edges, rising into my mind, so I kept frowning and then smiling little amused smiles at myself and saying, "What are you thinking? My goodness!" until finally they culminated. She was in the bathtub and asked me to bring her something, a book or soap or a washcloth, I forget what, but with it in my hand, I opened the door. At the time, we lived in a beautiful apartment consisting of one room and one lovely bathroom. The bathroom had the most exquisite green linoleum floor, smooth and cool under your bare feet, and almost the color of those 16th century Bruegel paintings, a special 16th century green that artists can hardly find anymore. The bathroom big and square, the side of the tub covered with wood paneling, and Jean in the water, so small and soft, her narrow shoulders and small, beautiful breasts. She sat in the bathtub, and I handed her, say it was a washcloth, and quickly went out and back into the living room. I remember her looking up, startled, when I came in. Maybe she expected me to just pass it in through the door. I didn't even see her that well. She was half turned away from me, but I remember her small body and, I think, surprised face, and I handed her the washcloth and went in the living room and sat down and said, "Whew, what am I feeling?" And from then on, through the rest of the day until I went to bed that night, my woman feelings were more out than they had ever been before. All afternoon I thought only of her, drifting thoughts, though feverish, her body, her small face, her skin, she in the bathtub, our caring for each other, but no action thoughts, no connective, sudden comprehension type thoughts at all. I still didn't know. When evening came and bedtime approached, the thoughts were still there, steadily growing stronger. Naturally, she was sleeping on the couch. My feelings were so intense I couldn't sleep, and when they both did, he next to me, she across the room, I got up and grabbed a piece of paper and a pencil and very quickly scribbled a poem, not letting myself listen to what I was saying, just writing it, some 8 or 12 lines of how I loved and desired her. I practically wrote it with my eyes closed. I couldn't face the fact that I was writing it. When I finished, I really closed my eyes and held very still, even held my breath for a little time, then slowly opened my eyes and read the poem. At first, when I saw what I had written, I didn't know how to react. I did the only self-defensive thing I could think of, quietly laughed at myself. When I stopped that, I just smiled, letting myself continue to feel amused that I should think such thoughts, and, so protected, buffered by my amusement from the reality of it, allowed myself to read it, over and over, maybe 50 times. At last I couldn't stand it, and took the page and tore it up, destroyed it totally, and went to sleep. In the morning both the feelings and the poem were gone, and my only conscious dealing with my lesbianism so far in my life was over. I was 28. Jean moved away, and I returned to my pattern of forming and breaking close relationships with women. All the feelings I thought I had for Daniel, and whatever their motivations, mostly my own needs, the feelings were gone. I resisted knowing it, pretending to myself and him that they were still there, but they were not. I pretended for at least 6 years of the 13, perhaps even 7, 8, 9. But please understand, I pretended successfully to myself, too. For all but the last 2 years, I had no idea it was a pretense, but it was. Aside from finally understanding I'm a lesbian, I don't think I ever really loved him, and he didn't love me. I loved him because he promised to fill my need, to be loved for myself, and he didn't. He loved a me that wasn't me, a new fabrication, and a 19-year-old one that he never wanted to see change, superseding the old fabrication my parents had said they'd love. Be this way, be that way. And he loved my need to be loved. He saw my need when he met me and chose it for his wife, marrying my need. He wanted someone, found me, to be dependent on him for emotional survival. Almost from the beginning, he used the threat of withdrawn love as a weapon. 1 month after we were married, for example, I was 19. I'd been writing poetry for several years. I'd gone to the first session of a poetry seminar that was very important to me. The class was longer than it was supposed to be. I ran the whole way home, ran to the bus, paced when it didn't come, ran from the bus stop to our building, knowing it wasn't going to be good when I got there. I opened the door. He sat across the room, scowling down at a drawing on his lap, and didn't look up. I said hello. He still didn't look up. Finally he did, with total fury and coldness. "Where the hell were you?" "But the class ran late. I didn't want to leave before it was over." "Oh, crap. The class ran late. What was I supposed to do? Sit here twiddling my thumbs waiting for you?" "No, you could. I mean, what do you mean?" I stopped, frozen into silence by the cold rejection on his face. For the rest of the evening, he didn't speak to me, and I followed him around the room with my eyes, silently or with stumbling words, pleading with him to speak to me. Please not be angry anymore, pleading with him. Please relax his face and stop being that way to me. But he didn't. Not that day or the next or until the punishment was over. I remember it as going on for a long time, though perhaps it was only a day or two. It was his weapon, withdrawal of love. Some parents used it on their children, and he used it on me, an emotional child, the child I still in many ways am now. But then, I was 19, but truly 19 months old, and he punished me that way, though I had done nothing wrong, and all through our married life continued to whip me with this most effective weapon. I'm just remembering how the hero in 1984 is punished for his nonconformist behavior with the thing he fears most, which they know about because they know everything. They let rats at him until he learns how he should think. When I read that book, I thought, with me, it's cockroaches, and in that world I couldn't let anyone know because that's what they would do to me. But I was wrong. It wouldn't be cockroaches at all. The threat of insects seems insignificant before what Daniel used on me. And Jean was away, and I went on with my series of short, intense relationships with women I couldn't let myself love. I remember how it was with one of the last ones. My whole attention was focused on her. When I met her, she had a young baby and would go rushing home from work to nurse him, her breasts so beautiful in her sweater, small, full, bursting breasts, her skin, her coloring, everything. I felt so strongly about her and still couldn't let myself know it. Perhaps if any one of these women had herself been a lesbian or wanting to come out and she had approached me, I could have been saved years of waiting. But it never happened. Maybe for safety's sake, I picked only the straightest women I could find to have crushes on. The children have just gone out the door. Laura has gone out the door. I'm alone. Waking this morning was so beautiful. She was singing to me, a funny song. Early, too early to be woken up. "What?" I mumbled, wanting to sleep more. "I'm sorry, I just felt like singing to you," she murmured, sleepy herself. And closing her eyes, went right back to sleep, curly hair on the pillow, soft cheeks, lovable mouth. I take such delight in seeing her in the morning. I wake more. My hand creeps to her cheek and begins to stroke it. Muttering, she turns over. "Sleep more," she says, "need more sleep." So I curl my front to her back, and we fit so well, crevice to crevice, and I creep my hand over her side to her front and stroke her up and down her soft body, cup her small breast, and then down over her belly to her legs, loving her. She smiles and goes on sleeping, and my waking is beautiful. Then the hassles with the children began. And by the time they were out, off to their father's, I was just as happy that Laura was going out, too. So I could have a little quiet and private and free, stretched-out space to lie in, to feel nothing but me, some sun, some air, some space in the room, to breathe in, some nothing to do, some time to think, some space and place for me to feel whatever there was to come up from inside me. Whenever I think there's nothing to come up from inside me, I'm wrong. Every time there is. I never lack for things to think and say and write about and delight in. It's the time, space, place, and stretch to be able to do it. It's quiet now. I've just put screens in the windows. It's spring at last, and I want the air to come in. There are four plants lined up on the windowsill, and the light comes through them green and truly beautiful.